No problem.
Thanks.
Wow, my dear landlord, please don't shoot us some milk.
And the previous program was Leonard Lopate at Large, heard usually Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for the Minefield coming up. It is 2 p.m. Stay tuned.
Deaf, dumb, and blind. Why is everybody making progress, yet we seem to be lagging so far behind? Why are we mistreated? Why are we in this condition, stripped of our names, our language, our culture, our country, our God, and our religion?
Hotep, Habari Ghani, what's up? Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to The Minefield, a show that examines explosive issues in black mental health. I'm Dr. James McIntosh.
And I'm Richardina Theodore. On today's show, we are going to play an interview we did of Dr. Brandon X. Lee, the author of The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, and a new book called Profile of a Nation, Trump's Mind, America's Soul. The main topic of that interview was the question, is Donald Trump still dangerous?
Dr. Lee feels that Donald Trump is still dangerous, and during that interview cited as one of the dangers of his legacy the silencing of mental health professionals. It turns out that her assessment regarding that danger was extremely prophetic, because we learned this week that Dr. Lee was fired from one of her positions at Yale University, ostensibly because of at least two tweets she made mentioning Trump and his supporters. At least one of the tweets mentioned attorney Alan Dershowitz. For those of you who don't know who Alan Dershowitz is, we will spare you the distracting, irrelevant details of his academic and professional accomplishments, which bear no resemblance to Trump's, and instead let you know about some of his history, which may bear some resemblance to Trump's. Firstly, Dershowitz is one of the people who, according to an article in The New Yorker by Connie Brock, helped broker the deal for pedophile sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, which resulted in Epstein's only serving 13 months in Florida for his sex crimes there against 34 or more women and underage girls.
Also, according to the same published report, Dershowitz represented Harry Reams, the male star of the porno film Deep Throat, who had been convicted of conspiring to transport an obscene film across state lines. Dershowitz has now complained to Yale about Dr. Brandon Lee for her tweets. Yet, according to the article by Brock in New Yorker, Dershowitz in the past was such a staunch supporter of the First Amendment that he once saw the suppression of the movie Deep Throat as a violation of free speech. Apparently, to Dershowitz, a porno movie is more scarce than a professor's tweet. I'm sorry, is more sacred than a professor's tweet.
Equally relevant to today's program, Dershowitz is also the person who in 2020 helped defend Donald Trump against impeachment and who now claims that Dr. Bandyx Lee violated the ethics of the American Psychiatric Association by tweeting that many Donald Trump supporters were suffering from, quote, shared psychosis, unquote, and that Dershowitz had, quote, taken on Trump's symptoms by contagion, unquote. Lee says she's not been a member of the American Psychiatric Association since 2007, so such an alleged violation of the American Psychiatric Association's so-called Goldwater rule against diagnosing people you haven't examined should not be applied to her.
After the break, we will hear from Dr. Lee about whom she feels has really violated ethics and is also still dangerous.
Oh, yes. In fairness to Mr. Dershowitz, although two women, Virginia Roberts Guffrey and Sarah Ransome, have claimed they were required by Epstein to have sex with Dershowitz and that they were trafficked, Dershowitz has explained that he did not have sex with those women. He does admit that he had one massage in Epstein's home. I'm sure it was a very little massage, but he says the massage was not from either of his accusers or an underage woman, but says Dershowitz, from a 50-year-old Russian woman named Olga. Not 15, but 50, see? Not younger, but Olga. Get it? Dershowitz also chose to provide another very important detail of that massage. He says that he kept his underwear on. I guess his point here is that, unlike Bill Clinton, he couldn't have had sex with his underwear on. He admits to being in Epstein's home in New York and Florida, but says he and Epstein discussed academic issues. Yep. We're serious. That's what he said. Let's hear it from the Isleys about what's really going down, and let's get to our interview with the prophetic Dr. Bandyx Lee.
Take them away. I could turn to it easy.
Trump is dangerous. Can you tell us how you all knew?
It was actually not difficult for any mental health professional that I know of. We have come to a full medical consensus very early on, during his campaign, if not early in the presidency. In fact, we had a medical consensus from the start, where hundreds and later thousands of mental health professionals came forth in unprecedented ways to warn of his dangers, because it was so clear cut. To this day, I do not know of any, I know just of two psychiatrists who have said he may not be dangerous, but it, other than that, among thousands, it has been without doubt.
Dr. Lee, were there any black mental health professionals that offered any opinion as to Mr. Trump's specific danger to non-whites and people of African ancestry?
No doubt there were, but unfortunately, I did not encounter them on the first round when I edited The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, which you may note that among the 27 mental health experts, I was able to gather they're mostly established white men and older, if not retired, because they felt safe enough, I suppose, to be able to speak up. But later, we were very heartened to discover Dr. Kevin Washington, who, as president of the Association of Black Psychologists, explicitly spoke up in a great way. And so we included him in the second edition, and he continues to be a very valued partner as a board member of the World Mental Health Coalition. And we will together be holding a town hall on March 13th on truth, reconciliation, and reparations. Speaking about white supremacy, Dr. Wade Nobles will be one of our guests. I know that you'll be having him next week. So I hope people will visit us, the World Mental Health Coalition, or worldmhc.org.
So was with such a large array of mental health professionals, was I saw a lot of words in the book that didn't seem like there was a consensus of opinion. There were words such as extreme present hedonist, dementia, pathological narcissism, malignant narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, bipolar disorder, delusional disorder. So was there a consensus as to what was wrong with Mr. Trump, or what accounts for the variation in opinion?
Yes, that was actually what is called a differential diagnosis, in that we listed all, we tried to be comprehensive and list all the different possibilities of diagnosis without making a definitive diagnosis. So we pretty much agreed on the whole list of possibilities. We refrained from making a definitive diagnosis precisely for the reasons you mentioned, without having done a personal examination with medical records. We normally don't always require an interview, but we do require all medical records, and we didn't have those things. But assessment of dangerousness is different from the diagnosis. And with respect to dangerousness, danger to self, others, or the public, we definitely had a consensus.
Christina?
Thank you. Is there any reason to still be talking about Trump now that he has been soundly defeated in an election?
Yes, absolutely, because there really has been no meaningful referendum on him. First of all, his presidency was full term, unmitigated. Both impeachment attempts have failed, and he was not held accountable for his mental unfitness or psychological dangerousness. When we had the right information available, that is through the Mueller report, already in April 2019, we did a full mental capacity evaluation, which showed him to fail every criterion for mental fitness. And so we essentially kept a person who was unfit to do the job, entirely unfit, and also a danger to the public and others, which should have disqualified him in themselves. And so what was done instead was the people who we had voted in to intervene on our behalf did not intervene, and therefore it was all left up to the people to vote him out. But that treats him like a normal president. And this lack of referendum, this lack of reckoning of for his unfitness, for his criminality, the lack of conviction or prosecution, all help to enable his influence among followers and his nation at large, because his presidency is seen as a success. But of course, it was almost our seat of government, created enough chaos to be able to stay in power. And this should not be normalized, or it will come back. So we absolutely have to do the work that is necessary to prevent this. And almost entirely the work is left to the people, unfortunately.
Now, you've written a new book, which at least by the title seems to answer Richardina's question. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I urgently wrote Profile of a Nation, Trump's Mind, America's Soul, because I was anticipating the dangers that would follow the November presidential election. Most people were just focused on the election, but I knew that the most dangerous period of his presidency would follow the election. And that is exactly what happened from the January 6th violent insurrection. In that, I outline also the course that the nation should take for healing. That since so much was laid on the shoulders of the public alone, we needed to take care of ourselves and to strengthen our spirit and resolve and to strengthen our voice against all the forces that are basically trying to undermine the public's power, including the silencing of mental health experts during the Trump presidency. Many people are not aware of this, but led by the American Psychiatric Association, mental health professionals were silenced from all the major media. Which led to his not being held accountable for his mental unfitness and also not being held accountable in any other area, since his mental unfitness and dangerousness were the number one defining danger of his presidency. All others were, of course, secondary. So by silencing mental health professionals, a dangerous traitorous and seditious president was allowed to continue. And now, even after his presidency, we see how there's a great deal of mimicking among other lawmakers. Many people continue to support him, and his followers continue to adulate him, as could be seen from the CPAC conference recently, the conservative Political Action Conference, where he was keynote speaker and almost deified through a glass, through a gold sculpture of him.
Do you think that Mr. Trump exposes the country to more of an external threat, such as invasion by a foreign power, or more to an internal threat?
Absolutely. He is an internal threat, but he is an external threat as well, since he weakens the country through stoking divisions and making us placing us in chaos, even with the white supremacist terrorism that he has stoked at unprecedented levels of any presidency. And he also has weakened our ties with our allied nations, has emboldened dictators and our enemy nations throughout the world. And when we have a weakened country that is that has plummeted in trust and in the eyes of the world, then we are more vulnerable to attacks and less capable of defending ourselves or even rallying our allies.
Now, you pointed out that, you know, the Congress failed. They didn't impeach Mr. Trump. If they had done so, he wouldn't ever be able to run for presidency again. So what should the average citizen, United States citizen, do now to keep safe from this danger? And what should be done by, say, the country as a whole?
Yes, unfortunately, almost all the mitigation of these dangers have been laid on the public shoulders. And first, we need to guard our mental health, because psychological vulnerability has been used and misused by Donald Trump and his enablers to further oppress and subjugate the population. And so we need to take care of our mental health, as well as be well convinced of our power as the people, because the people hold the greatest amount of power in a nation, regardless of type of government, according to David Hume, the 18th century philosopher. So, and I believe that is true. And Mahatma Gandhi himself wrote about how we are to train ourselves as warriors of nonviolence in a state of oppression. So taking care of ourselves is very important. And I outlined some programs in Profile of a Nation. But I also outlined three interventions. The first is removal of the offending agent, which was, well, Donald Trump was removed from the presidency, but his influence still continues. So to, again, it is laid on the people, the states and the cities, and public awareness to properly prosecute him and bring on a referendum to discredit him for being the criminal and unfit president that he was. Reducing his influence is number one. Number two is dismantling the propaganda and the cultic programming that have existed before the presidency and paved the way for Donald Trump's rise, but have accelerated and proliferated since his presidency, calling disinformation news and demonizing real news as fake news or the enemy of the people. These kinds of things should stop. And the people should be given access to proper facts and knowledge, including mental health expertise, which was critical during this presidency, but was blocked from the public through a silencing of experts. These are the things that happen in authoritarian regimes, and these have to stop. That's number two. Number three, the socioeconomic conditions that gave rise to the psychological vulnerability that led to such a an unfit and dangerous presidency should be fixed. What are those conditions? They include economic inequality, which I call structural violence, because the violence that unequal systems afflict on the public, on a population, is far worse than all the suicides, homicides, and collective violence combined, and 10 times, over 10 times more than that total number year after year. So inequalities need to be reduced. The structural violence of economic inequality, of racism and sexism, all play a role in not only oppressing people, but psychologically injuring them so that they would become more vulnerable to demagogues such as Donald Trump. So those conditions need to be fixed.
Okay, our time has flown. Dr. Lee, we thank you for giving us your expert opinion on these issues. WBAI family, you've been with us on the Minefield, and we'll be here every week, 2 p.m. every Wednesday, where we explore next week. Our guest is going to be Dr. Wade Nobles.
Remember that this is WBAI listener-sponsored radio, so
one with the biggest smile.